Hi, Simon Hill here. Enjoy our podcast? If you'd like to help us keep delivering the sort of quality football chat you want, then you can show your support by making a donation. Big or small, however much you can afford, we appreciate all your help, and every cent will be ploughed back into improving production. Thanks in advance from all of us at Shim, Spider, and so much more.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're with Shim, Spider, and so much more. Take it away, fellas.
Yes, hello again, and welcome along to the latest episode of Shim, Spider, and so much more. We thought we were an arachnid short this week when Zeljko Kalac revealed he was jetting off to Greece to start a new job with Xanti. But we reckon without the big fella's determination, not to mention his jet lag. So he is with us as per via Zoom, along with Craig Moore for our weekly chat about all things football. Good to see you guys. We'll start with Spider's big news. Spider, how did all this come about?
All I've got to say is, hell out here, boys.
How did this happen? How did we lose you?
Lastminute.com, Tony Popovich. Just said, we've got this opportunity. It all happened very quickly on Tuesday afternoon. It was all sorted. And Thursday night, we jetted off. And that was it. New adventure.
And how are you finding it so far, Spider?
Besides the jet lag, it's fantastic. We've had a little walk around the training setup at the field. It's all looking fantastic. Today is actually our first day. It is 5 a.m. in the morning here, local Xanti time. So we're looking forward to it. We kick off today training. We've got about 35 players. It's going to be very interesting weeding through all these players and putting the team together.
What sort of squad, Spider, in terms of you say you've got 35 players there? Again, in Europe, that's pretty much a normal roster. But will you be looking to yourself and Tony to reduce those numbers due to everything that's happening with COVID?
Yeah, look, Maury, I think the first thing is we've got a lot of young players at the moment that are under contract. So we want to have a look at those players first. Popper's in the process of finding some players and along with the sporting director and all that. So today, I think the first week, Maury, will be just weeding out the players, and then we'll try to assemble a team. I think we spoke about it yesterday about having 22-man squad. So it's going to take some time, as you know, here, and players are coming and going, and the amount of managers that are sending players through is incredible. There's players playing all over the world that want to come to Xanti all of a sudden.
Spider, Bill Pappas, who of course owns Sydney Olympic here in Australia, is looking to regenerate the club, and your move along with Popper and Arthur Dillis is a part of that. The club's just been relegated to the second division in Greece. They lost a playoff to Apollon Smyrnis, but I understand there might be some sort of an appeal which may yet see you restored to the top league. Is that right?
Yeah, welcome to Greece, Simon. we're still appealing. Look, I don't know where it's at. There's a lot of movement happening. We're not going to know more till the end of this week what division we're in, what league. They are appealing because apparently Polk's president had a percentage in the club that wasn't allowed. Xanti lost 12 points, which put him in the relegation spot. then they had to play two playoff matches, and they actually played the playoff players with the under 19 team because they had no players signed. So yeah, it was chaos. But Bill Pappas has now officially taken over as the Zanthi owner, which is fantastic and exciting times here. And Maury, you should see the setup here. Seriously, it's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. It's a club with a massive history, never being relegated, never being in the second division once they come up to the first division in Greece. So, you know, hopefully we can restore that. And I'm sure with Popper's guidance and Bill Pappas's knowledge, I think it's going to be a brilliant and exciting time ahead.
You touch on that, Spides, in terms of the facilities. We obviously had, you know, an experience, and it was a good experience at Kavala, which was a lovely little fishing village. How does this compare? Facilities are important in terms of when you want to instill that professionalism, and that sounds fantastic that you seem to have a good base and now to be able to bring some professionalism to that club. But how different to Kavala is it?
Oh, Maury, you remember the grounds we trained at Kavala? Like, it looked like they took the cows off 5 minutes before we started training.
Yeah, yeah.
This joint here is completely different. It has two fantastic fields for the first team. Unbelievable setups like dressing rooms, physios, ice bars, massage areas, all the kit and caboodle. The stadium is 25-meter walk to get to the main stadium. And then they have a hotel there. They call it Le Chalet. It's a beautiful hotel with another six fields where the youth train and the hotel where the players sleep and a big pool. Maury, seriously, it's astound me to see how good this place is.
Oh, Popper's going to love that, by the way.
Oh, on-site
residence, mate. What about the training camps?
Oh, in you go, straight into the hotel room, boys, and don't go home for 2 weeks.
Spider, Australians have been involved in Greek football before. Remember, I think it was Con Makris who owned Panathinaikos, or I think I pronounced that correctly, which wasn't particularly successful. Ange Postecoglou was coach there for a short while. Now, of course, you've worked with Popper before at the Wanderers, and you both had a stint in Turkey with Karabükspor in 17-18. It didn't last very long. What have you learned from that experience, the pair of you, that perhaps you can... I hesitate to use the words do better, because I think there was obviously a lot of off-field politics which impacted upon, you know, your pretty short tenure. But do you think that you've picked up things that you can do better this time?
Yeah, look... People don't realise that in Turkey, we were on a death ride as soon as we basically got there, because the president lost his position and he brought Popper and us in. So we were always going to be gone. So our stay there was going to be very short. But I can tell you one thing. I think what we've learned, and I think Bill Pappas is going to play a big part, and I think he must have done a great job to talk Popper into taking this. You know, having the stability of an owner that you know, that know our mentality, know how we're going to work, to give Popper the freedom to do simply what he done at Wanderers when Wanderers was born, I think that's an exciting project. And I think that's something that everyone here at Zanthi wants to do, because, as I said to you, it's a club with a great heritage.
Maury, have you got any stories of your time with Spider at Kavala back in 09-10?
Yeah, look, I mean, the big man was he was instrumental in getting me to Kavala. But I think I've told the story quite a few times. Within 10 days, the big man was out and I was stuck in Kavala.
You went to a World Cup, son. You went to a World Cup, son.
There was a plan in place, Simon. And like I said, Spider, football's all about introduction and networks. And, you know, he played a big part for me to get that opportunity. And I ended up playing 15, 16 games, Spider, with Kavala. Yeah. And it tied in beautifully, because I went into that World Cup, although being an older player, I'd gone in with virtually the most top three most minutes out of that whole squad for that World Cup in 2010. So it was a good time, and it was a great experience, and it was a new experience for me as well.
At Spider, we've got a Twitter question from Noel Hopper. Any plans to take A-League players to Greece? Now, that there is some talk today that Tony Popovich is going to bring his two sons over, Gabriel and Christian Popovich. Can you tell us any more about that?
Well, I'm guessing he would, because they're a part of the family. So I think his wife and his other son's got to come as well.
Right. Okay.
Well, good answer, Spider. Good answer.
He's into the diplomacy already, isn't he?
Nah, wait,
look,
great answer.
Look, you know what actually annoys me, and it does annoy me. Like, I mean, so Popper's bringing his sons. Let me tell you, Christian Popovic is that one hell of a player, man. And he's 19 years old or 18 years old. And people all of a sudden have this thing about Popper playing his sons. But Ivan Cleary's son plays for the Penrith Panthers as well. And what, he's a bad player. Let the kid have his own future. Now, whether Popper decides to keep him here at Xanthi with him, I actually don't know. We haven't spoken about that at the moment. But as a family, I'm sure they're going to come over. Do I think they're good enough to play in Europe and go somewhere else? Possibly. If it's here, we haven't looked at the young players here, Maury, as well. So we need a little bit smart in the way that we look at the younger players here and give them that opportunity. But as players, both Christian Popovic and Gabriel Popovic are very good young players.
But Spider, the reality is, mate, they're moving as a family. And for the next 6 months in Australia, what are they actually missing?
Football.
Yeah, correct. So it's a great option. Whether, as you said, whether it's at Xanthi or whether it's another club, with the next 6 months in Australia, we've had many discussions, and we'll lead into a little bit today as well. There's not a great deal of activity in the next 6 months in Australia.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Look, I'm a little bit. I think both boys have a very bright future. Whether Popper decides to keep him in, like, Popper's a very, very good coach. So he knows that for his kids to get the best development, it's probably a good idea to train under him, because he'll give them a great opportunity to get better. And we all know, Maury, that 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds, to break it into Europe, is very difficult.
Second part of the question from Noel Hopper, just a quick one. Do you know which former Man City manager was head coach of Xanthi back in the day? Quiz question.
Was it Kendall?
Yeah, Howard Kendall. Probably been Kendall. Better saying former Everton manager, to be fair. He's more famous with them. But
know why I know that? Because I seen the 250 coaches that coached Xanthi on a wall the other day when we went through it. He coached for seven matches, Maury. His record was two wins, two draws and four losses or something like that. Three losses. See you later, son.
See you later, mate. Off you go.
Let's hope you last a bit longer than that, Spider. Before we move on to Simon Says, Maury, what have you been up to? great news for Spider. We wish you all the best.
Fantastic.
Obviously, we miss you on the podcast, but we're going to rattle your cage every Monday
every week.
Morning over there in Greece. Maury, what have you been up to this week?
Yeah, look, Simon, to be honest with you, again, trying to prepare and plan for what, you know, what the next few months looks like. It's going to be very quiet in Australia. We've not had a lot of publicity, speaking to a lot of people on the street, you know, even talking about the grand final and that, just that marketing and that awareness of our game is not really out there. Mate, so the next 3 to 6 months, got to try to take the bull by the horns and looking at solutions for myself. In what I can contribute to football. So, look, difficult times for everybody involved, but at the same time, it can be exciting times because new doors can open.
Absolutely. All right, thanks, guys, for the moment. Let's get into Simon Says.
Simon Says.
So as we embark upon the long off-season with no idea as to when the next one will start, one burning issue is at the top of the agenda. Without a resolution to it, who knows what the next A-League campaign will look like? I'm talking, of course, about the collective bargaining agreement between the PFA, the Players' Union, and the FFA and its A-League and W League clubs. Now, with the game having taken a big hit to its broadcast deal, the clubs are seeking big pay cuts for some players, and a salary cap likely to fall from the current 3.6 million to just 2.1. The salary floor is also rumoured to be dropping to 1.7 million. Now, the clubs say this is to protect the survival of the competition, but with up to 80 players coming off contract, this, of course, creates a huge deal of uncertainty. Now, players have mortgages, families to take care of, and many have already taken a huge hit just to get the most recent season done and dusted. One player, Rostin Griffiths, said just last week that it was no longer their responsibility to keep fixing the league. He has a point. COVID has impacted upon everything, of course. Many people have lost jobs, while others have faced significant pay cuts or been placed on JobKeeper. Football is not immune from these issues. Clubs are struggling. Everyone understands that. They have collectively lost millions. And some of those losses will inevitably be passed on to the players. But is there a compromise solution? Could we, for example, have a cap-free year where clubs are able to negotiate individually with players? Some will pay more, some less. Critics will say such a system would skew the A-League towards the bigger clubs. But what is the alternative? An even but poor quality playing field, with the better players leaving vapor trails on their way to the airport? How does that help secure the investment the game so badly needs over the coming months? Perhaps a better outcome would be staggered collective cuts over a period of, let's say, 3 years. This would provide the players with some security, protect the clubs to an extent from the effects of COVID and the lower TV deal, and provide an opportunity for investors to come in, safe in the knowledge that expenditure will be reduced incrementally over a set period of time, on playing staff at least. It could even be an incentive, while protecting some of the league's better playing assets and thus keeping at least some of that quality at home. Crucially, this would also put industrial relations on the back burner at a time when the game needs to focus on finding those big money investors, including, incidentally, a new naming rights partner for the A-League after the expiration of the Hyundai deal. The last thing the league needs, surely, is open warfare with its biggest assets, its players, in the current climate. A three-year agreement with a gentler slope of reduced pay would also lead us into the Women's World Cup, to be held in Australia and New Zealand in 2023. After all, this CBA is not just for the A-League, but for the W League as well. Now, hopefully, once COVID clears, the economic climate will improve and the game can reset for a brighter future. But it's this interim period that is critical, a time for survival, of cost-cutting, yes, but of clear thinking, not swinging cuts to stave off short-term difficulty. The game has had too many of these moments, too much firefighting, not enough strategy. I have sympathy with both the players and the clubs. Both are suffering, yet COVID is not the architect. It's merely sped up a process and highlighted how poorly the game and the league has been run for years. Once the pandemic hit, football had little goodwill to fall back on, either within the corporate world or even in its own community, and all on the back of a governance war that was ruinous for the A-League in particular. Now is the time to heal the wounds and come together to find compromise solutions. Because if stakeholder is again pitted against stakeholder, then the A-League and W League's future looks rather gloomy, in my opinion. Spider, Maury, your view.
Look, I think you've touched on everything there, haven't you, Simon? That's the reality at the moment. So they need to find the solutions quite quickly. And, you know, the timeline of when we are going to start the A-League again is very important, because doesn't Fox deal finish at the end of June?
Yes, July.
So the later it goes, the more compact and compressed the league's going to be. So there's going to be chaos even in that. So the sooner they can start will actually make the league look more reasonable. In the meantime, James Johnson and Arnie and the new technical directors and the boards that they have there have a lot of work to do, because we need to start to get major sponsors back into the game. We don't know where it's going to be crowd-wise. I mean, it is different, even in Europe, watching football matches without crowds. It's just not the same, is it?
Yeah, and I think, Spidey, you touch on in terms of how we bring money into the game. And I kind of, at this moment in time, feel as if we haven't really capitalised on the success of the Women's World Cup bid. If we've got a 3 to 5 year plan, we should have people, if they're doing their jobs properly, that are desperate to be involved in what looks like a very, very bright future for the amount of eyes that we're going to have on our country in the next couple of years. Look, in terms of squads and all that, Simon, with salary caps and all that, we know the salary cap's not a leveler, but the longer things go, and if there's going to be further reductions, maybe clubs will look at reducing their rosters.
Yeah, and the CBA, Maury, I think that's due to come out at the end of this week. And the players, they've asked the players to take, 30% cuts. And the way they've done it, I don't know the exact way that they've done it, but, you know, clubs can give a player an offer, and if he doesn't take it, he's free within 7 days. This is going to be really interesting. This is almost like a money ball type situation.
Yeah. Sorry, Simon. It can be a real defining. Again, you know, every now and then in the game, there's this moment of change, and you need to come up with solutions. But potentially, we could have 70, 60, 70, 80 players, not knowing what their future or their futures are going to be. And Simon, you touch on, they've got families, they've got bills, they've got mortgages. So, you know, really tough times.
It is imperative we get this right. And let's hope all the stakeholders can find a good solution. Thanks, guys, for the moment. Let's move on to Hard Talk.
Hard Talk.
So the A-League season is done and dusted. So how does the game reset for next season, with the CBA being the exception, as we've already discussed that? What does it look like? When does it start? What changes do we need? Do we start in December? Do we start in February? Do we start in March? How many games did we play with a 12-team league? Do we keep VAR? Do we keep the five subs rule? What's happening with the second division? Does Canberra come in? Are we going to see the launch of FFA TV? I mean, we could be here for about 5 hours. What are your thoughts, guys? Maury, we'll start with you. What does this league look like next year?
Well, it is going to be next year, Simon, you know, so hopefully that's an early start in January, but we're still a little bit uncertain, but I think it will be a next season start. 12 teams, so that my gut feeling is that you're going to have a 22 game. Spider touched on the Fox contract running out in June, so a shorter season potentially, 22 games, two rounds, and then going into to a final series. VAR, unfortunately, guys, is gonna stick. Five subs rule, I think, will go back to previous in terms of the three subs. Second division, we're hearing talks about that, Simon, but that's 2022. That's what the talk is in terms of when that's gonna launch. Canberra have shown great interest. But we'd like to see it get to 16 teams sooner rather than later, even for 2022. Simon, would that not be a good shout?
Well, the sooner the better. At least get up to 14 teams, and then we could have you know, an equal sort of home and away season of 26 rounds, which I think would be ideal in the interim. But we'll have to wait and see if that eventuates. Spidey, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I don't mind the five subs rule, Maury, but I know that was put in place obviously because of the COVID, because the players hadn't done a pre-season properly. You know, the thing that actually interests me, like, so now they've played and finished the A-League, they'll only have short breaks. So by having only short breaks, you would think they could actually start playing matches sooner. The problem is, you know, getting into interstate, the travel, this is all a big problem. Like, is Melbourne going to play out of Melbourne? Are these teams out of Melbourne going to play in Melbourne? Or is there going to be another hub? Where's Wellington going to play from? Like, they're all really big problems that have to get resolved very quickly.
Well, teams, funny you say that, Spides. I mean, certainly a Wellington, for example, I'm sure already looking at solutions. So potentially if there is a hub scenario, that they actually just move them and base themselves in Australia.
Yeah. I think what will probably happen is that we will have a delayed start to the season, possibly as late as March, to try and circumvent the worst excesses of COVID. Mm-hmm. Hopefully by, you know, that time, we're back to something approaching normality, even if we don't have, you know, full admittance for crowds in the stadiums. But clearly with the A-League club still, at least in part, dependent upon gate revenues, we need to sort of, I think, stretch it out as long as possible. Whether a short-term deal could be done with Fox to extend that deal to September, October to get the season finished remains to be seen. But I think that's all stuff that the FFA and the clubs are looking at. And I just have a feeling we're looking at a later start rather than an earlier one, so that we can get back to something approaching normality. But we shall see. Now, guys, what we're going to do is we're going to go through each of the clubs individually and assess their season. I want your marks out of 10 as well for each club. So let's kick off with Adelaide United. What do we make of their season? They won the FFA Cup, of course, under Hertjan Bebek, who then later departed after a rather poor run of form. We saw the emergence of the young Toure's, Mohamed and Al Hassan. Good luck to him, by the way. It's just that ankle surgery, Al Hassan Toure. A great season for Riley McGree. And then they ultimately finished off unbeaten under Carl Wirtz, but unfortunately just missed the finals. Maury, your assessment of the Reds?
Yeah, look, after an ordinary start under a manager that never, unfortunately, worked for the football club, I think Adelaide are now a club where there is a clear identity of who they want to be in terms of promoting good young South Australian talent. And they'll look to try and get the best young Australian players as well. Carl Viet's done a wonderful job, and his experience has been with those youth players, Simon. So he had a fantastic finish to the season. And for me, Adelaide United have a good roster, which I quite like. And I think it hopefully can be a very exciting future for Adelaide United under Carl Viet. I think that they've done quite well in terms of how they've finished the season.
Mark's out of 10, yeah. Maury.
I'll give Adelaide a 6 out of 10.
6 out of 10. Spider, go.
Yeah, me too. I give Adelaide a 6 out of 10 simply because they didn't make the playoffs. They finished off the season very well and everyone was excited about that, but they still didn't make the playoffs. It'll be interesting to see what kind of job Carl Viet does when he gets going again in the A-League and whether they can make the playoffs. And I think teams around Australia need to actually stop saying we need to make the playoffs. Teams around Australia need to say we're going to win the championship.
Yeah,
good call. Mark's out of 10? 6, you said.
6.
Sorry, I messed up. Let's move on to Brisbane Roar, who re-emerged under Robbie Fowler after finishing last but one the season before. They ended up by qualifying for the Asian Champions League playoff, which is a pretty good response. Yeah. Obviously, Robbie Fowler left mid-season post-COVID. Warren Moon came in. Still a few issues off the pitch with this issue surrounding Robbie Fowler, which looks as though it may drag on. And Logan Council as well, threatening litigation against the club. What did you make of the Roar, Maury?
Mate, well, that's off the field. It's pretty stock standard for the Roar, unfortunately. But in terms of, look, Robbie Fowler, I thought, and Tony Grant, done a fantastic job. Stabilised the football team, brought in some good players. And look, without being highly entertaining, which Brisbane Roar previously have been, they were very professional, went about their business in a good way and were hugely improved from the season before.
Mark's out of 10?
I'd give Brisbane Roar, I'd give them also a 6 out of 10 because I think that there was decent improvement and I think they've got an opportunity to stabilise now.
Okay, Spider.
Yeah, I actually give them a 7 out of 10, Maury. I actually thought they'd done a fantastic job this year. I do agree that they didn't play this attacking, gallivanting football, but they got results and they were hard to beat. They were resilient. Very good season. Whether they can build on that is my big query. Big query.
Okay, 7 out of 10 from Spider. Let's move on to the Central Coast Mariners. Unfortunately, bottom again. That's 3 times in the last 4 seasons. Mike Charlesworth obviously putting the club up for sale. Some rumours of Canberra buying the licence. The stadium management rights were up for grabs up there in Gosford. But the Mariners have been knocked back by the local council, which is, to me, just extraordinary, given I know there's uncertainty over the ownership, but they're the only professional club on the Central Coast. But anyway, the stadium issues aside, the Mariners' season, Maury?
Yeah, look, I mean, very, very hard to be positive about the Mariners, Simon. Off the field, on the field, everything has been extremely extremely poor from this football club now for 3rd consecutive season. So probably not going to talk any much more. I would be giving them a 2. They need to improve massively.
Spider.
Yeah, me, I'd go as low as a 2 as well, Maury. Just simply because I'm actually quite sick of talking about the Central Coast. I just want them to fix the place. Because, I mean, you know, people were saying at one stage of the season, and I'm talking about journalists that report about football, how well Central Coast are doing. Mate, they're doing rubbish. They weren't even close to the playoffs. They were always close to being last and down the bottom. So, mate, fix the joint up. Rubbish too.
Sometimes you've got to be cruel to be kind. They need to improve.
You're not sitting on the fence, guys. I like it. Melbourne City, first grand final. FFA Cup final they got to as well, although they got hammered by Adelaide in the big showpiece event at Hindmarsh. First Champions League qualification, the form of Jamie McLaren, very, very good. The emergence of Tom Glover and Connor Metcalf and one or two others. And then, of course, they ended up the season with Eric Mombers departing and going back to France and the appointment of Paddy Kisnorbo. Maury.
Yeah, I think Melbourne City are starting to finally, you know, hit the potential that we all thought that they could have in terms of, look, recruitment's never really going to be, you need to get it right, Simon, but their networks are incredible. Paddy Casnorbo stepping in after the good work with Mombet, so I think is a positive for the football club, and they've still got great talent. So I think they've had a very good season. I'd be disappointed that they didn't actually get the opportunity to lift some trophies, but for me, they're a 7.5 out of 10.
Spider.
For me, they're an 8. I'll take 2 points of them for losing the grand final and the cup final. Other than that, I thought they were exceptional. I thought they did a fantastic job. Obviously, the manager come in and turn the joint upside down, which was needed. And hopefully they give Paddy the same free rein, and I'm sure they will continue their success.
Did we ask you for marks out of 10? Yeah, 8. You
said 8 out of 10.
Okay. Melbourne victory across town. Possibly their worst season ever. Marco Kurtz came and went. Grant Brebner now given the reins to rebuild. They've already lost Andrew Naboot, Lawrence Thomas, James Donaghy for next season. On the plus side, the fact that they were out of finals contention, I should mention Ola Toivonen as well. Of course, he's gone. Yeah. But on the plus side, they did blood some youngsters, the likes of Aaron Anderson and Lewis Laurie Latanzio. They were given an opportunity, Maury.
They were, and obviously they were able to because there was nothing to play for once we restarted. For me, I get the feeling that, you know, after the Ange Postecoglou's and Kevin Muscat's, where, you know, they really controlled what was happening at Melbourne Victory, I feel as if there's too many Chiefs. Hopefully, Grant Brebner, who, you know, has great knowledge and experience within the game, I think that he can come in and do a good job. But Melbourne Victory were really, really poor. They're a massive club. They massively underperformed this year, and I give them a 4.
Yeah. 4, you're actually being quite nice there, Maury. I'm going to go lower. I'm going to go as a 3. And I think Melbourne Victory will learn a lot from this year. After losing, like what you said, they had staff there like Muskie, Anthony Crea, John Paul DeMarini, they Steve Mortone, who else they have? You know, people who knew the culture of the club. They made a huge mistake when they signed Kurtz, showing the importance of a good manager who's got free rein to choose and make what's happening at the club. So 3, big lesson, but knowing the size of Melbourne Victory, I'm sure they will bounce back.
Let's move on to the Newcastle Jets. Not a great start to the season. Ernie Merrick departed the club in January. Carl Robinson came in and instigated a huge revival, even though ultimately they missed the finals. In terms of next season, Dimi Petratos has departed the club to go to Saudi Arabia, as we understand it. And of course, the club is up for sale. They need a buyer. Maury.
Yeah, Newcastle Jets, they're never normally just in the middle or just having an average. They're either shit hot or not great.
But
the reality is, Newcastle, since Carl Robinson has come in, he's done a very good job. He's going to lose Petratos, who's a big player, but, you know, Carl has again decent networks, and so does Kenny Miller. Newcastle Jets season football's finished too early for them because they were playing some great stuff and getting some really good results. So look, over the season, I'll probably give Newcastle Jets a 5, and that's no disrespect to Carl Robinson, because I think since he's come in, they've looked a hell of a lot better. But over the season, I've got to say 5.
Yeah, I give him a 5.5, Maury, because they were shite until Carl Robinson come in, and they didn't make the 6. They didn't make the playoffs, which is the top 6. So I give him a 5.5. But I think the future is bright with him in charge.
All right, on to Perth Glory. A very disappointing end to the season. Obviously, Tony Popovich is gone. We've discussed that at length already. Diego Castro's future is rather unclear. I thought they missed Gregory Vutrich a lot. Just look at the stats. His last 8 matches, Glory conceded 7 goals. In the last 8 games without him, they conceded 16. And yet, still on the back of that, they got to within a game of the grand final. A really odd season for Perth, this one, Maury.
Yeah, look, it was. But I think the important thing was, you touched on right at the end there, still got to within a game of the grand final. Look, it wasn't a season that kind of just hummed along. Sometimes you need a little bit of luck in terms of the injuries, in terms of players, you know, suspensions and all those kind of things. Popper had a tough job this season. And there were some results where he had to bounce back. He did bounce back. So I still think that Perth Glory over the course of the season, for me, are a 6.5 out of 10. They can be better, but I thought they were still decent this year.
Yeah, I give them a 6, Maury. Simply, I thought they could have won the championship if they didn't lose all the players post-COVID. And I think what people, and I think Popper copped a lot of wrongly criticised for what happened, because his team actually lost the most players. We can cover it up whichever way we want, but he lost 5 very key players going into the playoffs and post-COVID. So to actually get within one game of the grand final is very much a pass mark at 6. They got a massive job in recruiting a new manager, and I hope this time that Hayden Fox gets his opportunities. Worked under Popper at Western Sydney Wanderers, didn't get his chance there. They've never recovered from the mistake they made in announcing the coach that will come in after Popper. Hopefully Perth learned by that, and Foxy gets his opportunity to continue on the work that Popper's left behind.
I think your job's safe in Zante for another week or two at least, Spider. Sydney FC, the benchmark again, new Australian record of 5 championships, a settled team. Most of their transfers work. Costa Barbarousis, Alexander Baumjohan, Ryan McGowan, Luke Bratton, everyone a hit. And of course, they lost Alex Brosk and Brandon O'Neill from their title-winning team from the year before. The question mark, I guess, for next season, looks like Adam Lafondra is out of the door, as though he could be going to Mumbai City. Can they continue to maintain the heights? But in terms of this season, Maury, peerless.
Yeah, very much so. Look, apart from the little blip in terms of the restart, but you look at the players that they've had, their recruitment from Steve Corica, they're a very steady team with great professionals. You even look at the grand final, I think it was the last couple of minutes, he was able to bring Baumjohan, who's played at the highest level, on as a substitute late in that game. So it shows you the depth that Sydney FC have. They'll recruit well again for next season. But this season, for me, star team, 8.5 out of 10.
Eight and a half? Only 8.5, and they've won the double.
Mate, you can't look, for me, nobody's been perfect in terms of giving them a 10. So, mate, come on. I'm scoring it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
How I see it.
Go on, Big Spider. Chops, you score it however you want, son.
Mate, that's it.
Now, clearly for me, the benchmark of Australian football, I know a lot of people won't like to hear me saying that, but I've worked at, 3 of the big clubs in Australia, and they are the benchmark. They seem to get it right more often than they get it wrong. Very successful. Bimby done a fantastic job. And you know what? They'll lose Lafondra and they'll recruit well and they'll bring in good players. They blooded some young players, gave them an opportunity. Look, post-COVID, they weren't great, but they'd already won the minor premiership. So the bleep, I'm going to give them an 8.5 as well. I thought they were very, very good and the benchmark of the A-League.
Simon, so what would you give them out of interest?
Well, I think as a bare minimum, a 9. I suppose the only vote you can take off them, they didn't win the FFA Cup, but goodness me. When you win the premiership and the championship and you go back to back. Anyway, look, it's all a matter of opinion.
Mate, it's a tough school. That's a tough school, this.
Mate, you're a hard marker, the pair of you, but that's you know better than me. You mentioned good recruitment is key. Let's move on to Wellington Phoenix. Ufuk Tale. This is only my personal opinion. I know Steve Corica will win the Coach of the Year award, and that's fair enough too for winning those trophies. But what Ufuk Tale did over the ditch in New Zealand, I thought was sensational. His recruitment was superb. Cam Devlin was very good. Stefan Marinovic between the posts was excellent. They got a full season out of Luke De Veer, which is incredible given his injury concerns. Renato Piscopo was terrific. They continue to develop really good young talent. Liberato Cacace off to Belgium to play for St. Truiden on the back of Sarpreet Singh last year. Unfortunately, in terms of the finals, COVID probably hits Wellington harder than most of the other clubs, Maury.
Yeah, look, very much so. But what a very, very positive season for Wellington Phoenix. Ulfi, I agree with you. I think he's done a remarkable job because, look, he didn't just sort of like jump on the back of what Rudin had already achieved. He had to make changes. He lost players. He blooded new younger players. And I thought Ulfi done a fantastic job. Wellington Phoenix, for me, were a really exciting team to watch this season. I really enjoyed watching them. And for me, they get a 7.5 out of 10.
Yeah. Again, high praises for Ulfi and what he did. He changed the system. What Rude's played at Wellington, he come in, he changed the system. He recruited fantastic, played a high energy brand of football. For me, 7 out of 10. And he's a coach going places. I think Ulfi Tale done a fantastic job and just showed. You know what's scary, Maury, that he had to go to New Zealand to get his opportunity. And we've spoken about this before, that a manager like that had to go abroad, and we say abroad because it is abroad, to get an opportunity. And the same thing that happened to Roots. So hopefully our Aussie clubs can start looking a little bit closer, which they are doing at the moment. Now, I don't know if they're doing that because they want to do that or they're doing that to save money. I think they're doing it to save money, but it's great for the opportunity some of these guys are getting now.
And Ulfi will be sport for choice when he's ready.
Yeah.
Okay, Western Sydney Wanderers went local after the good start under Marcus Bubble completely evaporated. In terms of their recruitment, again, some worked, some didn't. Perman Schwiegler was good. Daniel Lopar was good. Alexander Meyer was offloaded very early. Majewski, the Polish number 10, unfortunately got a terrible injury pre-season and is now back in Poland. This was supposed to be the year of no excuses. That was the mantra this time last year for the move back to Parramatta and the new training venue. Just didn't work, did it?
Nah, in the end, they'll be looking for plenty of excuses for what was a very disappointing season for, again, Western Sydney Wanderers. For me, can be a real powerhouse with the catchment area that they have in terms of talent. But there seems to be something that's just not right there, Simon, in terms of, the communication, the buy-in, the everybody moves together as one. Hopefully, JP getting the reins for the next season and be able to put his own stamp on the team. Hopefully, it can be a positive change for what was a very disappointing season. And I've got the Wanderers at a 4.
Quite simply, they were rubbish. 3. Unacceptable for a club of the size of Western Sydney Wanderers. And let me tell you, it's a huge club. I think the stench around the place is woeful. I think the amount of people that are there for self-interest is diabolical. And they actually need a massive industrial broom and clean the place out. And the thing with Wanderers, they need to stop talking because way too many people talk there. They need to start doing. They need to be a powerhouse of Australian football.
Wow. So moving on to Western United. On the pitch, they were terrific in terms of results. Diamante, Berisha, two big characters, had great seasons. They were accused of somewhat negative football at times. Mark Rudin had a little bit of a fallout with Scott McDonald. And of course, off the field, they struggled to pull a crowd and moved around venues. Probably should be playing at a smaller stadium. What was your view on Western United, Maury?
I thought, look, Western United, I thought they had a good season, Simon. I thought Mark Rudin done a very good job. It didn't start the way I guess maybe they would have liked, and fair play to Rudes, who made some changes, some significant changes, and all of a sudden, a little bit of youth, some legs in the team, mixed with the talent of the Diamante and the Berishas. And they may not have been getting the crowds, but they certainly have a team that they should they should have fans wanting to support. I thought they had a very good season. 6.5 out of 10. Can they play in a smaller venue? That's something that I'm sure they're looking into.
Spider.
Maury, not bad, buds. I like that 6.5 out of 10. That's exactly what I had in mind for Roods' team. Look, I thought they started slowly, but I thought they just wanted to stabilise Maury. I think he was quite negative at the beginning just to start to pick up points. But I think as the season grew on, they gradually got better and better. And I think the way they finished the season was very, very good to get within one game of the grand final. Big pass mark, a lot to build on, bright future. Good job. 6.5 out of 10 for Western United.
Okay, and that completes our review of the clubs in the A-League for this season. Next year, of course, MacArthur FC will be with us. They've made some good on-field signings, the latest of which is Ivan Frenich. They've also released their membership prices this week, which is attracting a bit of attention. $440 for active support, which a lot of people think is a bit too steep. Anyway, we'll see how MacArthur go on the pitch and off it next season. Final bit of this segment. What is your team of the season? Maury, we'll start with you.
Oh, hang on. I've just got to bring that up, Simon, again.
Well, I'll tell you what, whilst you do that, I will give you mine. So here is my 11 of the season. In goal, Andrew Redmayne. A back four of Ryan Grant, Ryan McGowan, Curtis Goods and Liberato Cacace in midfield. Now, Spiders attack me for this because he says there's no defensive cover. He might well be right. Luke Bratton, Riley McGree. I know he'll have to play a bit deeper in this system, which he won't like. Sorry, Riley. Ulysses Davila, Alessandro Diamanti, and then a front two of Adam Lafondra and Jamie McLaren. I know it's not exactly a well-balanced 11, but I think they were the best 11 in the
A-League. It's your team, Simon. You can do whatever you want and pick whoever you want. So, look, I have managed to find my team.
Right.
And I've got Jamie Young in goals. I've gone for a flat back four with Kikuchi at left fullback, two central defenders, Taylor and Harrison Delbridge, and the mullet, Ryan Grant, at right fullback. I've gone for a diamond midfield with Bratton, the deepest. I've got Diamanti at the very top with Riley McGree on the left and Barbarousis on the right. And up top, I've gone with Jamie McLaren and Lafondre.
Interesting. So not that much difference.
Very attacking really. Teams there, boys.
Go on, Spider.
Spider's playing a 4-3-3. So, Simon, you see how the two coaches sort of said what system they were playing?
Yeah. Do you want me to read your team out, Spider? Because I know that it's...
That would be nice, mate. Yeah.
Right, here you go. So, Spider's gone with Paul Izzo in goal. Ryan Grant at right back. Liberato Cacace at left. I think we all agree with that. The two central defenders, Stephen Taylor and Tomoki Imai, which is a very interesting one, from Western United. Then in midfield, he's gone Josh Belante, Adrian Luna, Riley McGree, Alessandro Diamante, and Renaud Piscopo. Is this a 4-5-1 with Jamie McLaren up top, or is it more attacking than that? It's very well balanced.
It's a 4-3-3, Simon. Yeah. I've got Diamante rolling in from the right side, and I've got Piscopo rolling in from the left side for filtering balls through to McLaren, who will run always in behind. And I've got my two eights with Riley McGree box to box and Luna box to box, and Brillante just
boxer.
Up messing behind.
They roll in from the flanks as you roll in from the pub at 3 a.m.
That's the way, my son.
Love it. Okay, thanks for that, boys. That's the A-League season covered, done and dusted. Now, this week, because we've run a bit over time and we had some extra stuff to get away with Zeljko Kalates' move to Greece, of course, we're going to skip our overseas segments, and we will be doing a more in-depth look at the Premier League in particular next week. But for now, we're going to move on to our final segment and our very special guest in Footballers' Lives.
Footballers' Lives.
So joining us today via Zoom from Edinburgh in Scotland is Ryan McGowan, who's just won the A-League Grand Final with Sydney FC. That's created, I don't know if you know this, a little piece of history, along with his brother Dylan. They are now the only siblings to have won the A-League Championship with different clubs. And after Joel and Adam Griffiths, just the second pair of brothers to win the A-League. The Griffiths, of course, did it with the Jets back in 2008. Now, before returning to Australia as a player, Ryan, who hails from Adelaide, of course, played in Scotland for Hearts, then moved on to China with Shandong Luneng, back to Scotland with Dundee United, back to China with Henan Zhanye and Guizhou Zhisheng. then the UAE with Al Sharjah, then to England with Bradford City, back to Scotland briefly for a loan with Dundee, before finally making his first senior appearance in his homeland at the start of the season just gone. That game, of course, just happened to be in Adelaide, and to top it all, he scored a last-minute winner. Of course he did. He's won 20 caps for Australia, played the 2014 World Cup, and he's known to most as Gowser, I think. How are you, Gowser? Good to see you, mate.
Very good, thank you.
Thank you very much for getting up so early in the morning for us over there in Scotland. I know that you had to leave your newborn daughter over there to return to Australia and go into the hub with Sydney FC. So you must be delighted to be back in the UK to be able to see her.
Yeah, just had to reintroduce myself and let her know that I'm not just the phone, really. She's only seen me from the phone. But yeah, it's been good. It's been good being back. Pretty much left on the Tuesday after the grand final. So sobered up for the flight and got the long flight over, and yeah, daddy daycare since then.
And the grand final, Ryan, a tough game. I think probably Melbourne City would have found defeat tough to take. But do you think that over the course of the 120 minutes, you were the better team overall? And then you can tell us about the big celebrations you had afterwards.
Yeah, I thought it was a good game, to be honest. For a final, I thought it was pretty open. I thought both teams believed if they played the way they can play, they can win, which I think as a spectacle, you kind of really want to see. And I thought they started really well. Probably first 20 minutes were under the pump. But then after that, I think we just slowly kind of grew into the game and started getting our foothold on it. And possibly take out Glover and a couple of his saves. We could have possibly won it in normal time. And then extra time was a little bit, I felt like it's probably looking like penalties unless someone did something special. And yeah, lucky enough that Bratzy worked on a play that we've worked on all season, and Buster got in on the right and did a nice finish, and we could hold out and win.
Gowser, with the, obviously the restart, Sydney FC probably didn't bounce back the way that you would have liked. So in terms of, mentally, obviously the squad that you do have, there's great experience within that squad. In terms of what was going through your mind in terms of that switch, and were you able to, did you feel that you were able to turn that switch on? I mean, obviously you did, but that does play a part in football, where sometimes after a run of bad results, it does put that element of doubt in people's heads.
Yeah, we were quietly confident, but at the same time, we did have a couple of meetings and, we spoke as a playing group in terms of, it's all right saying to switch it on, but like you said, it's quite difficult to then switch it on. But I think a lot of it was a little bit circumstantial in terms of I think all the teams we played from the restart either had something to play for or kind of had to win when they played us. And we were also maybe slipped into that mindset of we had won it and let's just sort of build ourselves up for the semi-final. We knew it would be a one-off game. And then again, the teams that we played, I think we played Newcastle Jets. They beat us second game in, and everyone said that's the best game that they've ever played. Then we played, I can't remember now who we played. Like everyone that we seemed to play seemed to always have their best game.
Then.
Yeah. Knocking us off with being the premiers. Melbourne City, they beat us 2-0. And everyone was like, that was their best performance of the season. So we kind of came up against teams that were needing to either to win to make the six or win to finish second. And we probably took our eye off the ball looking in hindsight. But at the same time, we're also training well and maybe just results not going our way. And I thought the first half against Perth kind of blew them out the water. And obviously the grand final, most of us have been there or done that or played in big games before and know how to kind of handle that occasion, which we did perfectly.
Ryan, go on, Spider. Yep.
I knew yous would get to the grand final. I told everyone yous would get to the grand final.
He didn't back yous, though.
Yeah,
I've been watching the podcast, so he's just lying. Just lied there for the first 30 seconds.
It is frustrating as a player, ain't it? When you keep hearing, so you won the minor premiership, you pissed at him, right? So all of a sudden, now you are a shit team because you have lost a few games. Was it irritating for the players to keep hearing the media, Sydney FC lose again, they're on the downward slide? And how did Bimby keep the dressing room? I know Bimby would have been quite strategic in the way he just wanted to keep everyone fit, but was it actually giving you guys a bit of aggression towards everyone? Because you didn't really hit the praise you deserved for winning the minor premiership so easily.
Yeah, a little bit. It was a little bit frustrating amongst the players in terms of, I think if we beat Newcastle Jets when we could have got presented at the award, I think it was the second game back, we would have won the league with five games to go.
Yep.
And then at the end of the season, there was a few people saying, you know, if Melbourne City had won one more extra game, they would have only been 2 points behind. We felt a bit like... Yeah. My grandma, you know, like, what? Yeah, if, do you mean we've won it? Imagine if we, you know, we beat Wanderers once, we would have won it with six games to go. So it was a little bit disrespectful in terms of that. And then we sort of switched our focus to, you know, let's make sure our season's going to be defined by a semi-final and a one-off game. And yeah, to be honest, within the playing group, we're pretty relaxed in terms of knowing what we needed to do. I think the coaching staff was a little bit more not wanting us to rest on our laurels. And yeah, Bimby was, we'd sort of set some targets internally in terms of points and clean sheets and goals. So, you know, he was pretty focused on trying to achieve those things, you know, and kind of forget about the premiership. And that's what he wanted us to focus on in those kind of last five games. But at the end of the day, he also said we wanted to win both trophies and go back to back, which hasn't been done all that often. So, yeah, he was pretty delighted by the end of it, but I'm sure he was a little bit stressed halfway through the break coming back.
Ryan, I'm pleased you brought up the Wanderers there because, of course, your brother Dylan plays for Western Sydney. Did that help you sort of settle back into life in Australia? Because I know that you were literally next door neighbours where you lived in Sydney. And I'm sure Dylan reminds you or has reminded you that out of all the trophies you've won this season, you didn't beat the Wanderers in three attempts this season.
Yeah, it was pretty quick to remind me of that. And, I think after the last game, when we drew, we're shaking hands afterwards and he's like, you must be delighted to get a draw off us. I think you're about 17 points behind us, mate. This is enough for the comments after the game. But yeah, you know, it was definitely good to settle in after being away for so long. And it's probably the first time we used to live together when we were at Hearts. And then after that,
remember that,
we've kind of went here, there and everywhere. The both of us. So it was good to be back in the same city and sort of settle down. But yeah, we both knew players from each club as well, which, you know, really helped us settle down and enjoy our seasons.
Gowser, I wanted to ask you a question, mate, because this is now the big talking point in terms of seasons finished, uncertainty about when we start again, player contracts. How has it been left with yourself and other players in terms of leaving the club for the remainder of the season? When do you come back? What does that look like?
Yeah, so I think we're in a bit of a difficult or different situation from other clubs in terms of, I think we've got 21 players already signed for next year. So our squad's pretty much tied up in terms of, you know, there's not many of us in the group that are leaving or have that uncertainty of other clubs or wondering who everyone's going to bring in. So on one hand, we're pretty solid in that situation. You know, we're not worried about, are they going to give us another year or what's going to happen? Probably the only uncertainty is no one knows when the season's going to start. I know a few clubs have kind of told their players they'll possibly have, you know, a 10 to 12 week lead in.
Yep.
So whenever the season's announced, kind of work back from there on when you're due to report in. We sort of have the Champions League up in the air. So we have kind of no idea. It's kind of been a expect a phone call once we know more and we'll go from there.
Yeah. But I guess maybe more so my question is around about the uncertainty, the CBA still not being agreed. I know players potentially still have, as you said, 21 players still contracted for next season at Sydney FC. But is there still that uncertainty of all of a sudden you come back and now we're going to offer you something 20, 30% less of what you're expected to get?
Yeah, we'll still also have to wait for that phone call on what you're going to get. So, yeah, I think my wife hates it because after the COVID break, you get the phone call to say, you know, there's your 17, 20% plus JobKeepers and you're due on a flight in a couple of days. And then after that, it's, you know, when are you going back next? So I'm going to get a phone call of some kind of reduction and it goes from there. So, yeah, I think obviously with the PFA and the people that be, they'll make the decision on what's best for the group. And I think it's also very difficult to make a, you're probably making a league decision on players who are all at different stages of their careers, at different financial points of their careers. So it's, what some players would take 30% and just be delighted to be playing in the A-League, and other players, possibly couldn't even take 30%. They'd have to look at something else. And, if you're a younger player and you're wanting to get out, clubs are going to have a difficult decision in terms of what they want to do and how the clubs want to go moving forward. And I'm just glad I'm not at that table trying to make those decisions.
Mate, at the moment anyway, Ryan, look at the bright side, mate. You're not scared to travel. So if they do give you a reduction, Zanti's only 2-hour flight from Scotland.
I'll meet you there.
Ryan,
mate, let me tell you, mate, it's warm here.
Probably warmer than Edinburgh. That's for the future, Ryan. I just want to dip into the distant past for a moment, if we can. Obviously, you spent a large chunk of your career in Scotland. You're very closely associated with that part of the world. Your family's originally from Scotland. The highlight of your career there was that famous Scottish Cup final, Hearts against Hibs. You're smiling even at my suggestion of that memory. And you scored in the 5-1 romp. Was that, along with the grand final win that you just played in, was that one of your best days in football?
Yeah, it'd definitely be up there. I think from a personal point of view, that was the club that I left, when I was 16, 17, left Adelaide. And, that was the first kind of club that gave me an opportunity or I felt believed in me in terms of, they gave me the platform to go out there and try and be a professional footballer. And it probably took me 3 or 4 years to get in the first team and, all the uncertainty in terms of, I think I went on loan 3 times, different managers. Kind of finally break through into the first team, start playing regularly. And then we played in some like big games, played against Liverpool in the Europa League qualifiers, Tottenham in the Europa League qualifiers, so beat Celtic in the semi-final, last minute penalty, then go on to beat Hibs in the final score. So it was just a kind of combination of, 6-7 years of hard work and trying to make it, repaying the fans and the club back in terms of what they provided for myself in terms of platform and being able to be a professional footballer. And it's something that, like every young or every club likes to see players coming through, and the club kind of took me in as one of their own. And even still now, only yesterday I keep getting stopped or someone offered to buy me a pint and keeps talking about that day in May in the cup final. So it's still 8-9 years on, everyone still talks about it, which is
culture, Gauza. Culture, mate. That's a difference over
there. I'll buy your beer.
Yeah. not so much to buy you the beer. It's just you're remembered because these supporters they give everything to their football club that they support, and mate, they don't forget. They don't forget moments like that. They won't forget that unbelievable victory and that you scored in the final. So you'll keep going back to Scotland years. After years, and the same people will say it. But in terms of your playing career, we like to ask the player favorite stadium, favorite goal, and your best assist. I know what your best assist is because I've heard the story, but I'm sure some others haven't.
I've had a few assists, so I need to think about that one. But I've been lucky enough to play in a few great stadiums. I've been very fortunate enough in my career to have done as well as I have done, but I'd probably say probably Anfield in Europe. We had that Europa League qualifier. We got beat 1-0 at Tynecastle, and then we went 1-0 up in Anfield like last 5 minutes or so, and they put a pretty strong team out, Suarez, Gerrard, they had the few big boys at Anfield. So probably that goal in terms of our away fans and that chance of we could be taking Liverpool to extra time, and for 5 minutes we had that dream of the big cup upset, and then Suarez decided to just shoot that down and score in the last minute. We got knocked out in away goals, but that was probably one of the best atmospheres. Growing up in Adelaide, to think you would play against Liverpool, albeit a Europa League qualifier, was pretty special. And favorite goal would probably be, I scored in a Chinese Cup final that Simon's not looked at. So,
I've seen it. Don't worry.
So, I was confident going into this grand final in terms of I played 3 grand finals and scored in 2. So now it's 2-4. So
good record. Good form.
But, yeah, probably cup final against Hibs. It was a tap in, but you know, I think what it meant and the whole day and experience, and yeah. And like you said, everyone kind of remembers. You know, you can ask any Hearts fan; they can probably rattle off the starting 11 and the subs and what minute everyone scored in. So that's, you know, it's a pretty proud moment to be associated with. And then probably greatest assist was, I had a good cross in China when I was playing for Shandong against Jiangsu. So that was probably my best assist.
So you surprised me there. I was waiting for
hang
that.
On,
I was
waiting. Hang on.
I was waiting.
We've got to go to a Twitter question here, and I think this is what Craig is alluding to. This is coming from Jack George, and it's our question of the week. Well done, Jack. You win a $100 voucher for Outback Steakhouse. Has Tim Cahill ever given you credit for the assist to his volley against the Netherlands at the World Cup in 2014?
Yeah, he gave me like a sly pat on the back, good ball, but then that was it. That's what I've heard from. But no, yeah, it's, you know, that again, that's definitely something that, you know, I've luckily enough been involved in, and Maury was there in terms of, told the story before a little bit. I think I was the Stephen Bradbury of that sort of World Cup in terms of I thought I was on the fringes of even making the squad. Lucky enough to make the squad as I believe the sort of good trainer / squad player / if needed in an emergency could play. And unlucky enough for Franić, he pulled his hamstring in the first game and I got chucked on. And then I think Millsy was going to play right back and he kind of got injured. And then, seemed to be that I was the last man standing and played.
Hey, the puzzle just fell into place, mate. That's what happens.
Yeah, sometimes it works like that. And
you got to be ready to be there. You know, and that's the thing, mate. I can see you're just such a humble guy. And you're willing to accept that role at any level. And your career says that as well. And that's a big thing for young kids to know as well. Because to have success and to have a career, you actually need to be humble and wait for opportunities.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm a big believer in doing the things that are free or doing the things that you can control. So, it's like when you go to primary school, be a good role model in terms of, you know, you listen to your coaches, you be on time, you work hard every day, whether you're playing, whether you're not playing, whether you're the star player, whether you're the 15th man in terms of how you can apply yourself, and just be a good person, to be honest, at the end of the day. And I think if you do all those things, then that rubs off on other people. And I don't think you can ever have too many good teammates in terms of, you know, even at Sydney, if you're not playing, you still get the players being or wanting you to do well. That's how it feels. There's no sort of divide in that. And even more so when you represent Australia, you should be so lucky to be involved in that. So anytime I'm called up, I'm just delighted to be there. And if that's, you know, me training well against the starting 11 or being involved or making sure that I'm doing the right things for set pieces, then that's what you do. And if you're fortunate enough to play, then you've done all the right things in training to give yourself that best opportunity if you do get the chance. And lucky enough I did.
Ryan, you've had a terrific career and hopefully it's going to go on for a few more years yet. Before we let you go, last question, it's coming from Twitter again from Ben Archer. It's a two-pronged question, actually. First of all, where do you think Sydney FC would finish if they played in the Scottish Premier League or the Chinese Super League? And a second part to that, what is the funniest sledge or chant you've heard during your career?
There's a few good ones in Scotland, to be honest. I'm not sure if I can repeat a few of them.
Go on.
You can repeat anything on this show, mate. It doesn't go out anyway.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure at Easter Road at Hibs when we played there. So I was right back. So I used to be like right along the fans.
Oh, mate. They're grumps there as well.
Yeah. And a few of the good shouts, you know, to enjoy playing there because, like that's probably part of it as well, the banter and the sort of, especially in Scotland, it's kind of a free hit. You can meet anyone from any age and they just go for you in the streets in terms of, they're not humble, Jimmy. Well, you know what it's like. It's like a Monday. You're at the shops just getting your, you know, sort of bits and pieces and someone will just come out to you out of nowhere and just go, you're shite at the weekend.
Yeah.
Can I have a photo?
And you're like, you shouldn't even be showing your face, mate. You were shite at the weekend. They're savage.
So probably Scotland's the best one in terms of like the banter that you get from opposing fans. Yeah, I always get asked that question in terms of, like, you know, when I come here, everyone thinks, you know, how would Scottish teams do in the A-League? And then when I get to Australia, everyone asks. It's difficult. In Scotland, you've got good teams. Yeah, probably the big four clubs would laugh at if I said that they wouldn't win the A-League. And then at the same time, if I said that, you know, Sydney, I think they'll do pretty well in the Scottish Premier League. We've got some good players in our team. So, yeah, it's different. I would like to see a few Scottish teams.
Nice there.
I think it's just the mentality.
Go on, Maury, tell us where they would be.
No, I just think, Gaz, it's a mentality, because you know what it's like, Gaz, in Scotland. Like, every day means something, training-wise, mate, because everyone wants to play. So that competition on a daily basis, yeah, they'll support you in terms of the weekend and whoever's starting and all that sort of stuff. But it's a competition that I think that they get on a day-to-day basis that we still don't get at most places in Australia that would fare them better over a season. They would come out but it's hard. It's like, how do you compare it to?
Yeah, for sure. And I think sometimes, like you said, in touches of culture, in terms of players that aren't playing, I feel like in Scotland or in Europe as such, players that aren't playing work harder. And I'm not saying this in terms of in Sydney, because our squad's been really good. But in terms of just looking from an outside, it's been my first year in the A-League. Mm-hmm. And you see players, I'm not playing, or I've not been given an opportunity, I've not been given a chance. And they just kind of think that's that. Whereas you don't have that over here. If you're not getting an opportunity or you're not getting a chance, you do something about it. You work harder, or you make sure you're the fittest one, or you make sure you're stronger, or you make sure that you're better with your weaker foot. You just don't get given opportunities because you're a good youth team player, or you've done well at NPL level, or you've played for 20 minutes the week before and created a chance. That's kind of your role as a substitute, is to make a difference. And that's really, that's where, again, like, opportunities, or, we're very fortunate in Australia to have so many different things that we can do. So it's, that's probably the difference in terms of, even when you're starting and you're playing week in, week out in Europe, there's probably four or five people that are working just as hard as you, if not harder, to try and take your place if you do slip up. And hopefully in the coming years, we can have that in Australia. And
it's really a good message, Gowser. It's a really good message for the Australian player. That just because you're not playing doesn't mean that you look for excuses, you walk about the changing room sort of like your lip dragging along the floor. That's when you've got to be even more positive. I think that's a great message for anybody that's not playing. You have to work harder.
Yeah, for sure. And I remember as a young player being a little bit wet between the ears and being like, I feel like I should be playing. And Andy Webster, remember him?
Center defender,
I remember he must have seen that I was moping around, and he pulled me on a Tuesday. He's like, what right do you have to think that you should play? Mm-hmm. I remember just being like, I've trained well, and I just feel like I'm ready to play. And he's like, I've represented Scotland. I've played at big clubs. I've played over 200 senior games. Mm-hmm. You've played 20 minutes and you think you can't train as well because you're a little bit annoyed that you didn't play at the weekend. And I think sometimes you need those players at your clubs. We've definitely got it at Sydney in terms of, keeping the standards high and making sure that you need to be not only training well for a couple of weeks, you need to be doing that week on week, month on month, to be until everyone in the squad's thinking, why is this player not getting that opportunity?
Mate, that's a great message, mate. That is a great message, and it shows why Sydney FC's had so much success. I always say that in every dressing room there should be a big bloody mirror so players can actually look at themselves in the mirror and not go around blaming other people all the time.
You're too tall for the mirror, Spider, unfortunately. guys, we're going to have to leave it there because we're running out of time, and I think we should let Ryan get some sleep as well. Hey, Gaz, thank you so much for joining us. I know it was an awkward time over there in the UK, but we really appreciate it. Congrats again on your grand final success, and look forward to seeing you back in Australia very soon, mate.
Cheers, guys. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, Ryan. Enjoy your holiday, mate.
Thanks very much, Ryan. And that is us for another week. Thanks again to you for listening. We're now up to well over 12,000 downloads of our episodes, and we're closing in on 1,500 Twitter followers. And providing the alarm clock works in Greece, I'll be back with Spider and Maury the same time, same place next week. Until then, bye for now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.